Hello, and welcome to the Green Team of the Legendarium, the weird little spinoff podcast of the Legendarium, where patrons get together to discuss the books and topics the main crew haven't gotten around to yet. I'm Little Red Book, and tonight I have with me Kipton.
Hey, Al.
And Stormrunner.
How's it going?
And Spook.
Hello.
Tonight, we will continue our journey into the Old Kingdom with Lariel, daughter of the Clair. Start off, how do you feel about this book in general and in comparison to the previous book? Kipton.
This is my favorite book in the series, but if I could just select part one of this book, it would jump even further ahead.
Yeah. So do you want to kick out a character?
Oh, I'd love to kick out a character. Sam, go away.
Oh, Sam. Yeah.
He's there.
I have different feelings about him, but okay.
Oh, he's fine.
He's the maiden in distress. It's okay.
He is.
Yeah.
He's a very boy, okay?
I mean, first of all, we're entering spoiler. Just
a little bit. He's a very special boy, okay?
Stormrunner, how do you feel about this book in compared to the other?
I thought it was good. I didn't like it as much as Sabriel, largely because you can cut this if it's a spoiler, because it's not really a complete book. So like that, it does kind of get
not.
Yeah, it kind of gets knocked for that. I do agree with Kip about part one, like the opening section is definitely stronger than the more adventure-y parts that come later, for lack of a better word. But yeah.
Journey section. I don't know.
Yeah. Ooh.
How do you feel?
So much better than Sabriel.
Okay.
I think it's less about at least the story of the book. Just reading it was so much more fun, I think, as a whole. Because it's the pacing, I think, was more what I like in pacing.
Not gonna Do you want to just better. Talk about book one?
Yeah.
Part one?
No, it's... Yeah. I mean, I'm also a big fan of the genre that it starts out with. So it's kind of grouping
Depressed
all that
teenager
together.
Who wants to kill herself?
I was say what...
Is that your favorite genre?
No, like academia. Academia. It's good. It's fun. Kind of.
It is, but I don't. Well, okay.
The first one.
But no, it's sneaky academia.
It is. But yeah, the book is just better. It's more fun. More fun to read. I enjoyed it a lot more reading it this time around. It didn't feel like it was rushed. It felt like he was able to take his time and kind of explore the world. It felt more like what the first book should be, and the first book felt more like a prequel that came after.
I think that's fair. I would say I don't consider this its own book. It and A Porson are definitely two books and are definitely one book. And I would say that is the only drawback. But otherwise, it's so much better than Sabriel. And I love Sabriel.
it's better written for sure.
Yeah.
We could probably make a list of trilogies that have a relatively contained book one and then a books two and three that are really book like the same book.
And the funny thing is Lyriel as a book is so much thicker than Ed Porson. So it really feels like he just reached a binding maximum and then everything that got put into Ed Porson.
He reached a word cap where his publisher said, "We can't give this to children. You gotta, you gotta,
right,
it's the Lord of the Rings at this point. You gotta cut it down a little bit."
So this is a repeat question, but this book is most often marketed as a YA novel. I found it in the grown-up section of Powell's, which is my local bookstore, and much to the disbelief of several people on our Discord. How would you categorize it, and what do you think is the most acceptable level of disturbing or scary for kids or young people?
I'd call this standard adult fantasy, and I would not really restrict it to any kids who are fine with violent content. The sexual content is almost non-existent. So it's just the violence and the necromancy and like the body horror bits that you're objecting to. And maybe some dark thoughts in the heads of our protagonist.
That was the big thing I was thinking of. I'd say probably YA, but mostly because of the content is gets blurs the lines a little bit, but mostly because of how streamlined the narrative is and how limited our points of view. We get like really two main points of view, except for the prologue, I think. And then, and the story, or the plot itself is, we don't see a lot of the periphery stuff that's happening plot-wise. So like what the reader
is seeing. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah. No,
I'm saying that.
That makes it YA or not.
No, there's plenty of adult books that have
that's true
narrative.
Maybe it's like, I think some of it's some of it feels more simplified than it might be if it were like an adult book. Maybe that's not the right word, but
yeah, I track what you're saying, and I do agree where the way it's written is in like the prose, I guess is the word, written for younger adults. It's a lot easier to read in terms of the words that are used, and the story structure is pretty simple, but the content is kind of reaching the upper level of that young adult. Like Brandon Sanderson for Mistborn, he says that like if Mistborn was written by a woman, it would be considered a YA. I feel like this is kind of tiptoeing in Mistborn area, where it's kind of YA, but we're also getting a lot of adult elements that we see in a lot of older fantasy.
I think it's standard adult older fantasy that could be marketed as YA nowadays.
Yeah,
that's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
I would say this is an adult book. This is for adults.
Yeah.
100%.
I don't think that the primary audience is like small or immature readers.
Definitely not immature readers.
No.
I was going to say.
Every chapter I read, I kept saying he wrote this for children, and it just got darker. Not darker, because it started off very dark, but it's still like, I did ask myself that a lot.
Well, I've read his adult fiction, because he does have adult fiction, and I would say that this fits. His other books in this world are very much more YA than this.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it feels like he wrote some middle age books and it stuck in his later Old Kingdom stuff.
But Mr. Fitz is very much adult if you've ever read those short stories.
I haven't read that, no.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay, Kip, I believe you have a summary.
Oh, it's recap time already? We haven't even done star ratings or anything.
Okay. So I would say 4.5. I think I gave it the first one 4. Whatever, half a star above the last one.
I'll give this 4.5. And we know where the half point is getting deducted.
Or who it's getting deducted from.
Yes.
I'm going 4.5 as well. I think I rated the last one 3.5, and this one's just one full star more.
I'd probably say 3. I say like 3.7 if I'm allowed to do in between, but
sure.
But like I would default to 3.5 if I had to.
You know, we have very strict rules about our stars here.
I think a more objective rating for this would be 4 stars, but I'm giving it the extra 0.5 because of book one, of part one of this book.
Okay. Sure.
Just the Lyrial section alone, I think, is so strong that it gets a 4.5 from me.
Yeah.
Now I'll do the recap and we can talk about my clear biases. So... Entering spoiler territory in 3, 2, 1. We start with a prologue with an ominous meeting by the Red Lake, a wild and sparsely inhabited region of the kingdom where necromancers conspire, wards are breached, and a master lies waking. Then, we're in the head of a deeply depressed duckling whose whole community feels alienating. Lyrial yearns for her birthright, and to escape it, she dives into the great library of the Clare, trying to content herself with a different treasure of her people, Treasure and danger, she finds aplenty. Magical books, enchanted chambers, free magic creatures, and the disreputable dog, who becomes her inseparable companion. On her 19th birthday, when all the adult Claire are brought together to try and see something near the Red Lake that resists their sight, Liriel finds a door with her name on it, and follows it down deep into the glacier to recover her heritage as a remembrancer placed for her in centuries past. With it comes a vision from the 9-day watch. Liriel must go to the Red Lake, find Nicholas Sayre, and stop Hedge, and whatever he's doing there. In an entirely equal and not at all subordinate part of the story, Prince Samith gets ambushed, brought into death, traumatized by Hedge, and spends the majority of the rest of the book running from death in one way or another. After a disastrous attempt at escaping the capital incognito to go and rescue Nick Solo, Samith ends up in a bathtub in a river with Margot, where Liriel rescues him. They journey to a Porson's house together, facing a number of dead and free magic things, where Sam shows that he's not entirely a coward. What nobody expected was that Liriel would recognize the house from her experiment with the Dark Mirror, and the fact that she's Sabriel's half-sister, and the real Abhorson in waiting.
Dun dun dun! Mm.
So yeah, I said my biases would become clear.
I don't think Sam's that bad, but I...
I have a lot of sympathy for Sam. He was very badly traumatized.
Because he made a frog!
That, yeah.
And tennis rackets.
And oh my gosh. So his sister is a huge word I can't say because I don't want Kip to have to beep it out.
She's just a little oblivious sometimes.
No, she is outright mean and she bullies him. And I have
she belittles his feelings.
The dude just got freaking trapped in death and then addicted to morphine or something.
She sees her that happened to her mom all the time.
The whole thing. Okay, we're gonna get back to this. How do you feel about how Liriel deals with her depression and disappointment around not gaining the sight?
I mean, she does it terribly badly, but also I love how she like makes plans.
Yeah, she's not. I don't want to use the word moping. But
I mean, she is. She mopes a lot.
Yeah.
And then the dog bites her.
Yeah. Which is understandable, the moping. But like you said, she does do things kind of despite that.
Yep.
I like the fact that the twins intervene in her life and are like, let's just give you something to do.
I would love if someone was more proactive about it. I would love if she didn't like slip through the cracks and wasn't allowed to slip through the cracks.
But I feel like because the Claire
can't see her,
Yeah.
Their standard protocols go out the window.
Pretty much. I feel like that's kind of the same as what happens with Sam. His parents are really, really busy. And it's not that they don't care about him. They just have a lot of other stuff going on.
And neither of them were like properly trained for the position.
Right.
Yeah. I did have done with that. So Sabriel basically does the same thing with Sam that her dad did with her.
Yeah.
Where he sent her off to the school and would see her on breaks, and that was about it.
I do think it's interesting. This is kind of getting to a next question, but the comparison between the two characters of Liriel and Sam, where they're both kind of, they fall through the cracks of their own caretakers. And it's interesting how we see Liriel use the cracks as a way to progress her own self, where she dives into the library because they can't see her. They don't know she's down in there. And that just kind of progresses her own story. Whereas for Sam, his parents don't see him and he's happy with not being seen because that means he can sit in his tower and make little toys and things and not actually do much else. I do agree that Liriel mopes, but she doesn't wallow in that moping.
Does Sam have one friend?
I mean, the whole
Nick? No, the no. like the, yeah, the whole team, right? The whatever the sport is that they play.
Yeah.
I mean, cricket.
Yeah. Oh, I is it named? I forget if he mm-hmm. names it.
Yeah,
cricket. Yeah, it's cricket.
Oh, okay. I like I forgot if they named it or not. Okay.
I mean, they use cricket words.
Okay.
The author's Australian, so that also makes sense. That
fits.
But So here's the thing about Sam is that he's going along. Everything's great. Then he goes into death without the bells, without a sword. And he's horribly damaged by that.
His own choice.
Yes, but I think it was a very brave thing. And Sabriel should have sat down with him and had a talk. And she didn't.
I mean, she was almost like an amputee.
Yes, I realize that. But what I'm saying is that she should have taken him aside. And then they put his sister in charge of his recovery. And it's just like, what? All the adults are failing, guys, in this whole story.
Well, there is Zhal Yoren, right? The person who's like prime minister or whatever. Co-counselor, co-regent.
The actual regent, yeah.
Yeah, the actual adult who Elamir is supposed to be sharing responsibilities with.
And he does nothing.
Yeah, he's not a character.
And then Nick's parents don't bother to show up either when he was nearly killed.
I thought he was sent off to them.
And
you know, a servant showed up and picked him up.
No, servant showed up, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
His family can't leave the capital.
Royalty.
His parents are very busy. They're very, very busy with parties and crises.
Yeah, I actually think the Claire are probably the worst example like of the adults who fail people, just because there is an entire, it's the entire organization that like just that.
They seem to have people to do, doing a lot of jobs.
Yes.
And yes. None of them are looking after Lyriel.
Yeah. Yes. Well,
and her aunt.
On Curith, just, no help.
She
terrible.
Just actively despises her.
She seems to think that being impartial means ignoring.
Right. And yeah.
Oh my gosh. When she gets that birthday gift. I mean, I almost wept.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing worse than getting kids' clothing in a size that you will grow out of in maybe 5 years. Yeah.
And that's your only gift.
And just, it's your only gift, and possibly your only clothing.
True.
And what you think would be your last gift up to that point in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, Onkirith did not help Lyriel's thoughts of suicide.
Nope.
I not think she really hated her. I mean,
I don't think she hated her. I really don't think she hated or resented her. I think she resented her mother and therefore just ignored Lyriel.
So what do you think about the little meetup she has with her great, great, great grandmother?
Filris. I mean, I loved that. I just, you know, wish that Lyriel could have someone who sees her who doesn't die immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, the twins or
Sinar and Rael. They're there.
But they kind of they nudge her
twice.
They nudge her out of the glacier the second time, but yes. No, they stand up to Curith the second time.
Yeah, they basically say shut up.
Yeah, they're like, Curith, you are absolutely not doing what you're supposed to be doing right now.
All of the adults kind of suck. Does that make it YA?
Yeah, I was saying, which is kind of a YA thing.
Fair enough. Yeah,
like,
sure.
The adults are not allowed to solve any of the problems.
They're not proactive in the story. So,
how do you feel about the observatory guards who made sure that she was blindfolded?
Oh, yeah.
That was brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
And they kept calling back to it, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lyriel's like, family doesn't blindfold one another. And they used her headscarf to do it. Her headscarf that she's like so attached to, because it hides the color of her hair.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Don't take someone's coping mechanism and use it to oppress them. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Not a good look for the Claire.
I really like how unself-aware she is about how other people see her, because her family ignores her. And the only thing she's so focused on the sight.
Yep.
That she can't think that other people have other interests, including the Claire, in fact, and that young man who approaches her in the lower refectory. And she's just like, all he wants to do is say hi and have a conversation. But she is hyper fixated. I mean, I guess I could understand why she would be, but she is so fixated on the sight that she can't see that there's other things interesting about her.
She's like, their whole society is set up, so she doesn't even get a like a room until she sees the site. New clothes. She doesn't get a job. She doesn't get anything.
She did get a job though, because
twins. But she had to like almost commit suicide to get that job.
Yeah.
Well, if her aunt had been paying attention, she would have done something. That's the real problem. Her aunt is
It's not clear that she would have even had the power to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. No, she would have, because the twins get jobs before they get the site.
The twins are special.
And so so's Lariel. She's special too.
Not according to the other Claire.
I don't know. There was just a system breakdown around her, and
the twins are pretty. The twins are pretty and blonde.
I mean,
and Lariel's in the Claire's glacier. That makes a difference. No. You got to be the archetypal Claire if you want to get all the special advantages of being paper wing pilots when you're 16.
Yeah. To be fighter pilots, basically.
Yep.
I want a Top Gun spinoff where they're flying people.
Paper wing squadron.
Rogue squadron, but it's with paper wings.
But are we going to have a beach volleyball scene? That's the real question.
They fly across the wall and just break apart.
No, they go to war with Encelsier, but then their planes kind of crash on the other side of the wall.
Yes.
They're just like lobbing bombs across, and they're hoping that by the time it gets far enough.
Is the wind blowing in the right direction?
Yes.
That's what we need to know.
Well, the charter majors can fix that.
Some of them.
So, yeah.
I mean, most of them can fix it, but can they control it afterwards is the question.
Right. So, we already talked about Sam. Mogget versus the disreputable dog. Who wins, says Merle. It depends on what you mean by win.
What's character? Winning? Because they quip a lot, and the dog is
up on that one.
Right? The humorous exchanges in general, I would say that the dog wins, though the dog is aided by the fact that a lot of the journey takes place in water, and the cat can be splashed.
Fair enough.
And the cat is sleeping most of the time.
Yeah, I think I like Mogget more, but we just get more of the dog doing stuff.
Oh, the dog is my absolute favorite animal companion ever.
Yeah.
I love her.
I love the dog.
The dog has incomparably more lines.
Yeah.
While Mogget does more than Sam does in the entire story. I think the dog is the better character.
No. In fairness to Sam, he builds a lot of things.
The frog. Yeah.
What else did he build?
I would like a frog.
Tennis rackets.
He builds cricket players.
The sword.
Yes, he enchanted a sword.
No, that's in the next book, so he doesn't and then build it broke. That yet.
She's giving spoilers.
I'm not giving spoilers. I said he builds that in the next story. I didn't say that what he built.
I am interested to see that aspect of him to grow. Now that he no longer has to deal with the weight of being kind of this failure at Porcelain and waiting, I do look forward to seeing how that aspect of him grows. The part that he's actually interested in doing, which is creation.
And yeah, he's a wall maker.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which we find out at the very end of the story.
Whatever that means. Yeah.
I like that he says to himself, my sister is going to say, explain it to me, and I can't, and it's just going to drive her crazy. She's going to think I'm lying. But that is an important part of his character.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I do like it once it's there.
And once he's released from his fear of, he's like, okay, so I don't have to do this thing.
Yep.
I can do this other thing and still contribute.
And these bells and books are not going to miraculously follow me around.
They do.
Reminding him of his failure.
Yeah.
The book's whole dynamic also just gets better once him and Lariel meet up.
Right. Well, the book is like using Sam to get to Lariel, and he's just freaked out that it's haunting
him. Because all the plot stuff is happening, like the most of the plot stuff is happening in Sam's part of the story.
Oh, come on. Then, Liriel had a whole journey and like a vision room that she had to discover that was laid down centuries before her. That's plot stuff.
It is plot stuff and it's important, but the bigger, like the actual lining up of events for
yes, happens to Sam.
Yes, it happens to Sam. Yeah,
I will say I knew about halfway through the book that the story was not ending with this book. I knew like we're still
We're like halfway through and Liriel hasn't left the glacier yet.
Yeah, like what does she have to do with this? And we're not getting a conclusion. This is
Well, you can go read A Porson now.
Yeah, lovely book.
It is. It's a nice conclusion of this book.
When I reread the trilogy, I read just the first part of this book, and then I go and read all of A Porson. Just read the Liriel chapters of this one, and then I read A Porson.
You're like, screw that, dude. I love Sam. I do. I'm sorry. I just do.
Okay.
So what do you think this book says about courage?
That sometimes the most courageous thing you can do is sing your school song.
Yeah. That sometimes there might be other ways for you to exhibit your courage and skills than what appears obvious or what you people have been telling you is the way you're supposed to exhibit that courage.
Yeah, you want to talk about the worst bit of courage? We can talk about Nicholas Sayre.
Yeah.
Another character I feel bad for. Poor Nick.
I would say to answer for that question, no matter what you think of the predicament, pushing through it, because even though Sam whines the entire time about everything, he still keeps moving forward. Even though he's an idiot about it, he still keeps moving towards that destination.
Yeah.
Which is courageous. It's stupid, but...
How do you feel about the point where he was consulting an almanac about like the best places to eat on the way to the wall?
Oh, I knew it was going to be a nightmare. We're gonna
stop here for the jellied eels.
He's such a even though they have what perspective, I think they call it. They're supposed to spend.
Yes, perspective.
He really is a privileged kid who's never really had to.
He got a reality check pretty quickly,
yes,
too. Yes. After thinking he murdered two people as well.
I love it when Mockett shows up. And he's like, no, you did not kill them.
You would know. And then
feel death, right?
I also like how later Mockett was like, yeah, I knew you weren't the Porson. You can't be. I knew I just had to wait.
She'd show up eventually.
Does bring up a question about if does the whole in waiting thing really matter? Because
do you want all training to be done after you get the job?
No. But like,
one of the things that Clariel talks about is about how that progression happens and how it goes really wrong. But A Porson's family used to be like a whole bunch of people, like much like the Clares, like 5,000 people. A Porson's family used to be like that.
Hmm.
And same with the royal family. So the A Porson in waiting was actually a really important role because that would be the person who would take on the lead of the family when the A Porson died. But if there's only like two people,
they get the full mantle.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. It just didn't like the whole. Maybe I'm just. It's a semantics thing of the in waiting made me feel like, oh well, they're not really doing anything yet. But it's kind of like more of like I'm thinking like a Jedi master and apprentice type of deal where, like it's not like it's a mantle that's passed. It's the in waiting
like rule of two.
Right. Yeah, the in waiting abortion can still do everything the abortion can do.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously some training, but other than that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assume that the sword gets passed down when you finally become the real Borsan.
Yes, that too.
Yeah.
I love the swords, guys.
And maybe there's like an in-waiting set of bells and a normal set of bells, but I don't think there is, actually. I think it's just that one of the bells is like older than the other.
Isn't that because...
Because they reference that the Abhorsen in waiting bells was the bells of a certain Abhorsen.
Yes.
The bells that like Samoth had. So I do wonder how many sets of bells are at the Abhorsen's house, but I'm not going to get the answer to that question.
I don't think they would be able to find them all.
The Sendings have hidden them.
Oh, Maga is finding them.
Maybe Wendy's awake, yeah.
So how do you guys feel about the reveal at the end of the story? Where L'Oreal finds out.
Go L'Oreal, collect more powers.
Yeah.
I just wonder honestly why it took her
more magical books.
Why it took her walking into the dining room to realize who she was. Like, I just feel like her showing up at the house. I don't know.
It's the only vision she had. She only had the vision from the inside of the dining room.
Okay, fair enough. I like how Sam keeps looking at her and she's like, he's like, she reminds me of somebody.
And then it's like, my mom.
Mother, yes.
So great.
But then he's like, she's so pretty.
She's like in her 40s or whatever.
She's 35. It's a little Freudian.
Yeah.
In fairness, she tells him that that's how old she is. And,
yeah. And then the doc says,
the dog is like, ungents.
Lotions. My mistress is vain and works hard to preserve. Right.
I mean, I think considering the environment Sam grew up, he was a bit too unaware to know any better anyway.
I mean, he's like, what, 18?
Yeah, 18, like 19.
I think he's like 16 or something.
I don't know.
I don't know.
He's the one that's typical fantasy protagonist age.
I mean, Muriel's only 19.
He's the farm boy, except he's not the farm boy. let's see, what else have we got to talk about? Would you try free magic?
No.
No.
This is from...
I mean, actually, yes.
Manu.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say you would, Kev.
Look, it is heavily implied that there are portions of free magic that are okay to use while, like, belonging to the charter.
That's true.
And I would definitely experiment with at least those portions of free magic.
Because the dog even says that there are Claire who are playing around with free magic.
The dog does say that, and I would be one of them if I was a woman who could see the future.
I would not, because I've read Clariel.
I mean, look, not every... I've heard of biosafety labs that have needle sticks and infections and things, but that doesn't make me not want to work at one.
Storm?
Oh, yeah, no, I do wish that we in general got more magic, like, of people doing magic. Like when L'Oreal fights the beast, whatever it's called, down in
the Stilken.
Yeah, the Stilken. Like that was a really cool scene, and
it was.
I wanted, because they spend the book. Well, the book in general spends a lot of time having characters think and talk about doing things.
there is indeed a lot of talk about destructive charter magic, and it almost never gets used to effect.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and so, like, both with the magic and in general, like, there's a lot of talk about doing stuff. There's a lot of talk about what the magic can and can't do, but I kind of wish we saw it used a little more.
So, that's all charter magic. What about free magic? Would you use that?
Probably still no, but with the asterisks of the safer portions, I guess.
The spells that open the gates of death are all free magic.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Which I wish that we got more. I wish we got more just of characters going into death in general in these books. Because that's because that's like my favorite part of this series so far. And like, hands down.
Oh, it's very cool. Death is very cool.
I love when she finds the book and makes herself into an otter. That's like my favorite part.
That was fun.
Yeah.
And then there's another part where she makes herself into another animal.
Yes.
With her red waistcoat. built into the fur and her Pine Marten,
very smart looking otter.
Ice Marten. Yeah. Her red fur that she can't see because she's colorblind.
Why? Aren't you proud of yourself? Okay, Spook, would you use free magic?
I don't think so. I think I would be the one that gets caught and mistaken for a necromancer. Or I would just be a necromancer, you know?
I mean, fair enough.
Well, doesn't Hedge in the prologue has a set of bells?
Yes.
Right? So, like, that's the other thing we were talking about, the bell. So it's not, there's clearly there are other sets of bells.
But not like the Abhorsen bells. They have charter magic in them.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes sense.
There's two types of bells. There's the free magic bells of a necromancer, and there's the charter spelled bells of an Abhorsen.
Okay, all right.
Same with swords. There's charter magic swords and free magic swords.
Yep.
Okay.
And even the charter bells of an Abhorsen, they contain free magic bound within and melded with charter magic.
Much like the dog does, and Mogget does, and the books of...
not like Mogget does.
Oh, no, Mogget's mostly free magic, but his collar is charter.
Yeah, the collar.
Yes.
But also the books like the pipes. Of the dead. Yes, and the book of Remembrance
and Forgetting.
Yes, those are both... free and charter.
Yes, but not in the skin of a lion.
What did that have free magic in it? I don't remember.
No, that was just charter magic.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, how do you feel about the ending of the book?
What? What ending?
Wait.
There's a period.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, that's not an ending. That's just a chapter end.
I mean, that's
yeah.
how I feel about the
same. Yeah, but
you know,
same.
It could be called Lyriel Part 1, and I'd be okay with it.
I also skipped a question. What about the cousins having to bang each other to make
more Blair and Abhorsen? Oh, no, please.
I'm not even going to try this
book. Read this book. Read this question as it was written.
You read it.
Okay, so this is also from Simonu. With this whole book's remembrancer slash wallbringer idea, Nixon engages in fantasy genetic jiggery-pockery, in one sense, elegantly and kids story-wise, resolves key internal conflicts for both our main characters, but on the other hand... the kingdom is just without key individuals unless someone decides to shack up with their cousins. Question marks.
I mean, I think that in this case, it worked out that way, that there was a direct daughter of the Clare who went and had sex with the Abhorsen, and they had a kid who inherited the powers of both of their bloodlines. But I think that if the kingdom were in a more healthy. Populated and the bloodlines were both healthy and they were all doing their stuff, that sort of intermingling would happen anyways.
Yeah.
And a Clare would just pop out being like, oh, this is our remembrancer this time.
Yeah.
Like maybe every generation or whatever.
And you feel that way because the Clare like just have random dudes up to their bedrooms.
And their bloodline always rings true.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Though there are male Clare.
There are, but we never see them.
We never see one.
I want to see a male. Give me a male Clare. I just want to see one. What's he doing?
I like to imagine that they're having a great time.
I want to know what. Maybe Lyriel could have hung out with them because maybe she would have fit in better because maybe they don't get the sight. I don't know. We don't know. We don't know.
We don't know. Yeah.
So frustrating.
Yeah, for a not gender based magic system, it seems a little gender based.
Well,
they say I am a daughter of the Clare.
Yeah,
that's the okay. That's they true.
Say quietly in their little like groups of three and four, "I am a son of the Clare."
Yeah.
Do they have their own observatory?
Maybe I'm imposing.
Do they have to live in the basement?
I'm imposing Wheel of Time a little bit, I think, but
I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's like Wheel of Time.
No, not at all. But
talking about women characters, I really hate.
Which, well, okay, that's a different.
All of them. Well, not okay. All of them. That's okay. Not true. I'm not a fan of the Aes Sedai in general.
Okay.
But Lyriel, I'm a huge fan of. She's amazing, and I want to be just like her, and I want to unlock my magic bracelet so that nobody knows I'm going into the secret places in the library.
Wouldn't it be great to not to have to talk to anyone for weeks or months at a time?
No.
And just read.
Just read and talk to your dog.
Well, hers talks back, which is like
a, which is amazing.
Yeah, but yeah, like that's some point. Yeah.
Okay, that's so a at different this point, scenario. I'm gonna have to tell you that I'm an extrovert and I really like talking to people.
Okay, second assistant librarian Imshi.
Yes, exactly.
I used to be much more introverted. I now need a balance, so I don't know if I could quite do that now. I could do it for spurts, but not for quite that long.
Look, I talk to enough people at my job. I come home and I talk to my cat. I think it's the same lifestyle as Lyriel.
Lyriel gets to write notes.
I mean, I think you can do that too.
do you wonder how Lyriel would do with like a Slack at work?
Oh. Hey,
someone starts pinging her about one.
I mean, I think they're all going to be accidentally muting her because they just don't see her.
No, she's good at her job. Her job isn't much, but she is good at it.
Shelving books in their proper place. That is an important job.
Sure. And the Sendings love her.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Because they think she's very efficient.
Dedicated. So if you could have any magical book, what would it be?
Oh, I want the one that teaches me how to create Sendings.
Mm. Does it have to be one that's in this story?
No, just a magical book. If you want a magical book.
Imagine never having to do the dishes again.
No, but the dishes are cathartic. And like, it's kind of a menial task that like
fold your laundry.
Yeah, that I could do without. But
cook your food.
But Kipton, if we're talking about any magical book that opens up the grimoires from Black Clover, that's real magic.
What you mean from Horsehead?
You just want a superpower then?
Yeah.
Clover grimoires are not what I would pick unless I get Julius Nova Kronos.
I just want a big sword. But from
doesn't have to be from the series.
Any magical book. Yeah, even one that like I want a book that will teach me to talk to animals. Like it doesn't even have to be a real in a fantasy world.
I want the Wizard's Manual from Young Wizards by Diane Duane.
That's a good choice.
The book that contains literally all of the secrets of the universe.
Can I say The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Does that count as a magical book? I think it does.
I mean, it's a scientific book.
I was going to say, if you want to follow the Nick sort of path of reasoning, it is a mag. Well, it's a scientific book, which means magical as well. Yeah,
okay, so that's the one I want.
Okay. Okay.
It works.
And you know what? That's a great guide to getting around Earth. Absolutely.
Now that you mentioned the grimoires, but from Black Clover, that opens up.
I have not actually read these books, so I know nothing about
it. It's an anime. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Freaking spooky anime. Okay, so Storm, go.
Yeah, I would just want something like a grimoire from Black Clover that basically would give me some sort of superpower. Like probably, like I read it and it has different spells of either teleportation or
big sword
or ways to get other people's powers.
So not the journal from Death Note. So you could just,
you're
like,
stealing. I was gonna say that as a joke, and you took it. I was gonna be like the Death Note.
All right, so who are you writing down first?
Nothing I can say.
Honestly, I would get the animal skin one because I would like to turn into an otter or different animals. That's really what I would want to do if I had magic. So, what bell would be on your collar from SIBO? On you? When you?
I don't know. Sleepy one.
Sorry, dude. Oh, so you're going to be Rana. Okay.
Yeah, so I can sleep.
I don't know if this is like a great personality quiz question because like we theoretically would not have put the bells there.
Yeah.
Like, and it does seem like the standard choice is Serineth, and Rana was only used because Serineth was not available.
It was just there. Yeah.
Serineth was broken.
First one she grabbed.
Yeah. So Serineth.
If we're interpreting the question as which one would you like to use, then probably Dirim, the speaker.
Mm.
Like being able to speak to the dead by choice would be a, and kind of tapping into their wisdom or being able to speak with like a lost loved one, like that'd be a cool power. Cool is not the good right word for that, but.
I think I'd be drawn to Belgaire if we're just going by qualities of the bells, the thinker.
I would say Kibbeth.
Okay. You like jaunty tunes.
I do. But that's not why. Final thought. Predictions, Spook.
Spoilers.
Oh, boy. All right. Predictions. Let's see here. I didn't read the synopsis for the next book this time around.
Oh,
it just says the story finishes.
True. The story finishes. I want to see more of, I want to see Sam actually do things. First one. I think starting in the house will be very neat. So we get, I hope to see that we get more of the house itself. And kind of see them prepare for the battle. That I imagine the next book is going to be pretty focused on just the battle against Hedge. If not another book, and then it's like, okay, now we're going to go to Clariel where we finish the battle. But I want to see more. I think Nick is starting to become an interesting character a little bit, serving as a vessel for Caragor. Or another character. My assumption is Caragor. So I'd like to see that develop. Because I also think that's interesting. Kind of, he's serving as another go-between between Encelsier and the Old Kingdom. And kind of seeing how, if this wasn't a more YA book, seeing how that affects the politics between the two. Because I do think that would be interesting. Because it's, you know, the Duke's nephew. Or whatever his uncle is.
Prime Minister. It's very analog England during World War One.
I don't think we're going to get more Sabriel and Touchdown. Probably not. I don't see a big like scene where it's like, oh, we're coming to save you now. Because I think they're kind of in it to do it at this point.
So I don't think this is a spoiler. Clariel takes place like 1,000 years before these three books.
So a person finishes the trilogy then.
Well, there's a short story after it, but yeah. And then there's another book after that.
And then there's a prequel.
And then there's a prequel. Yeah.
Yes is the answer.
We're going to see more than just a period at the end of the
book. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Good book. Excited for the next one. I think I'm more excited to continue the series than I was after Sabriel, both because this book didn't really end.
You know the great thing about finishing Lyriel? You can go back and read part one again.
And then get sad.
Also true.
The first chapter.
The beginning of the books are off.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to kill myself. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
She's a depressed duckling.
She's a 14-year-old.
Poor little girl.
I think she's like 12 at the start. 14? Okay.
14.
Yeah, 14.
12
okay.
is yeah. when they normally get the sight.
And it's been 2 years, and it talks about when she gets the sword, because she's younger than 16, but she's, I'm pretty sure she's 14. Because when she gets Binder from the Librarians.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's 14 at the start. Yep.
And being a 14-year-old girl is all sorts of nonsense. Which he writes very well, by the way. I want to say, I'm sure being a 14-year-old boy has a different set of nonsense.
It's hard to say this with...
As a 12-year-old?
No, with the perspective of not being a woman. I think he writes women really well.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just other characters.
The continuously like weaker characters in his stories are men, which is
yeah. Touchstone is yeah.
the worst character ever. Touchstone
was a guy carrying people.
Touchstone was more of a Touchstone's object really to look at. Than...
Yes.
It was all the female gaze.
He's just yeah.
How did you like the story of how he tried to pick up the throne and throw it?
Oh my god. Oh, it's so bad. Anyway.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good book.
I love this story.
I think I liked Sabriel more just because it felt more complete, Vince? But this one's better written as far as character development and the actual writing.
Yeah, absolutely. Imagine if we'd had a part one of Sabriel, which all took place at Wyverly College.
Oh god!
You know, there is a book like that.
Harry Potter.
It is the prequel. No, it's the prequel to this book. About Sabriel's dad. And a girl he meets.
Tersiel and Eleanor.
So, Tim Curry does an absolutely fabulous job.
Absolutely.
Reading the story.
He's great.
And this is one of the books that, and this is going to sound like a slam. It's not a slam. I will turn on a book to listen to when I go to sleep because I love it. Mm-hmm. And I can wake up and know what's going on in the book because I've read it so many times.
How is that a slam?
No,
I see what you're saying.
He has asleep. A luxurious yeah. voice. It's okay to fall asleep to his voice.
But I've read this book so many times that I can put it on when I'm going to sleep and I wake up and I know what's happening in the story. That's
that
is not a slam. And also Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Read Tim Curry's great. Grover Gardner, my second favorite.
Tim Curry, I will say, he does the animals really well.
Yes.
I think those are the best voices he does.
Yeah,
I think his humans kind of all sound the same, but the animals are top notch.
Okay, so thank you so much for joining us. Please consider supporting the Legendarium on Patreon. Thanks to Craig for loaning us a little corner of your media empire, and to Horizon Brave for starting this all. For Kip, Spook, and Stormrunner, I'm Little Red Book. Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Good night.
All right.